Hi, everybody. My name is Alex Vigderman. I'm a research and development associate at Baseball Sports Ball Info Solutions. And I'm here to talk to you about synthetic StatCast batted ball data. I'll get my clicker thing. So the overarching idea of synthetic StatCast is a way to supplement the StatCast batted ball data set. So we'll go over how we could go about doing that and why we might think of doing that in the first place. Then obviously how one would go about creating synthetic StatCast data, how similar that is to the real thing, and how we might be able to apply that model to other data sets. So when we're talking about other data sets, we're thinking of MLB outside of the StatCast era, the minor leagues, particularly the high minors, and soon we'll have access to Japanese data. We'll be able to do something with that as well. And then last, I'll just talk about some future directions that we can take this research. So that includes finding different ways to use it and also enhancing the data itself so that we can make it a little bit more robust. So I guess I'll start out by saying, obviously you've seen through the other presentations over this weekend, the StatCast product has created a wealth of opportunities for research in a wide variety of things that we really didn't even think that we were going to be researching. And so we can sort of ask a lot more questions than we thought we were going to be able to before. And it's given us a lot of data that wasn't accessible before. But with this sort of immense undertaking that MLB has taken, some of that data, there's just so much data, there's going to be some hang-ups, some issues here and there. One of the limitations is just that the system has only existed for the last 3 years. And so if we're trying to do some sort of time series analysis, it's a lot harder to come up with robust data when you only have 3 years of data. The other thing is that some people might know that there are limitations from the radar perspective. This is run using the TrackMan system. And so in particular, extreme angles, up, down, left, right, are going to have trouble. And that can lead to either gaps in the play-by-play, or as a result of that, you might have trouble mapping if there are five pitches in the at-bat, but I only tracked four, maybe I can't identify which pitch was which, and some stuff like that. The other thing that might come up is sort of an erroneous recording. And so that's essentially that the most common example is a chopper hits the ground so quickly that when it gets recorded, it's actually coming on the way back up. So it gets recorded as a blooper instead of a chopper, and so obviously you get wildly different results from that. And these are all relatively small samples for each of these things, but when you sort of add them up or when you're looking at a more granular level, they do appear for you. So this was a couple of plots from an article by Andrew Perpetua, who does a lot of great stuff for the Hardball Times. And this is showing the results of the no nulls solution that MLB had put out. They actually presented at Sabre last year about this. So they're trying to resolve some of the issues with the radar by filling in some of the exit velocities and launch angles that they're reporting using values that are sort of averages of what you might expect from balls that are hit to a particular fielder with a particular kind of batted ball type. And you can see, so we have exit velocity on the left and launch angle on the right. And you can see, obviously, that there are these very high peaks at particular values, and that's where we're seeing these filled-in values from MLB. I want to call your attention in particular to a couple of peaks on each of these plots. We have a couple at around 80 miles an hour of exit velocity, and then on launch angle, we have one at around negative 20 degrees and one at around 70 degrees. And we'll get back to those particular values later, but I want you to just note those particularly high peaks there. So StatCast, the batted ball side of things, is based on the TrackMan data set, as I sort of mentioned earlier. And that data has existed for years, and it exists across a wide variety of levels of baseball. So that's going MLB as well, you know, earlier seasons, but that's going all the way down to high school in certain instances. It's going to Japan and Korea. So that data is all over the place from the team perspective, but it's also not as complete for the same kind of reasons that the StatCast data set is, with the additional constraint that StatCast is mandated to be present in all the major league parks. TrackMan doesn't have that constraint, and so there are parks that have to sort of opt in to TrackMan, and so from a league-wide perspective, you won't have all the data available potentially, especially when we're talking about earlier seasons. And from the public perspective, when we're trying to look at TrackMan data or stuff that comes out of that, that limitation is obviously even worse because really the only kind of data that we have of that sort is from the StatCast data set, so that's last 3 years, just major leagues. So BIS set out to use our data as a substitute when StatCast data is unavailable. So that's the unavailability as a result of some of these technology limitations and also because we can go to date ranges outside of the StatCast era. And so we track dozens of things about each batted ball, you know, the basic stuff, what kind of batted ball it was, where it landed, and then we have a bunch of other stuff that's related to all the fielding metrics that were discussed in some previous presentations. For this particular model, we used a few different components of BIS data. The first is the batted ball type. So obviously you have your sort of basic ground ball, fly ball, line drive distinctions, but we also have a more smoother distribution in terms of air balls. So we have the idea of a fliner, which is essentially the blurred line between a line drive and a fly ball. And so it allows you to get a little bit more of that exit, or the launch angle details there. And we also include the hit location, so where it landed, that includes essentially horizontal and vertical, or horizontal and distance, and hang time, so how long it took to get wherever it was going. So I mentioned the sort of different reasons why we might have StatCast data missing, and missing is probably a bit of an aggressive term here, but essentially for whatever reason that data is either questionable or outright missing, or it's been, you know, sort of replaced by this null solution. And in terms of the last 3 years, from fair balls in the major leagues, we're missing around 13.5% to 15.5% each year. You can see that it's sort of held relatively constant from year to year. When we combine that with the BIS data, we essentially get 100% coverage. So this is the combination of where we have something from StatCast or something from BIS, and the cases where we have neither is, you know, 0.005%. And of course, there will be a little bit worse percentages here if we're looking at minor leagues or something like that, because the video quality is a little worse. And we'll get to sort of the ramifications of that a little later. So the model that we're using is what's called an extreme gradient boosted random forest, or XG boost for short. I'll try to not describe this too much because I don't want to reveal my ignorance to the people who know what I'm talking about. So a random forest is essentially a collection of decision trees. So a decision tree, if I'm trying to characterize a batted ball, I might say, did it go at least 200 feet, yes or no, and I create a branch. Did it take at least 3 seconds to get there, yes or no, create a branch there. And did it, for example, go at least 5 degrees to the right of second base, yes or no, and I create a branch there. And you can create a bunch of these little decision trees, and they each create sort of an estimate of the likelihood of a particular kind of characteristic of a batted ball. So if we're talking about exit velocity, that those characteristics I gave you before might describe an 85-mile-an-hour batted ball, and then if you went a different path down that tree, it might describe an 87-mile-an-hour batted ball. And so you can create these kinds of predictions based on this what's called an ensemble of trees. And the advantage to a random forest, in particular for this purpose, is that it's not constrained to the structure that you would prescribe for whatever you're analyzing. So a lot of the times when we're talking about some of these kinds of nonlinear models, we're trying to create buckets, and they're, you know, 5 degrees this way, or 5 miles an hour, or 10 feet, and there's all these distinctions that aren't necessarily meaningful, they're just round numbers. And so the advantage to using something like a random forest is it allows the data to speak for itself. It allows the data to tell you where the boundaries need to be drawn. And so you can see in the right image over here, that boundary between the green and the red points is drawn in sort of a jagged way, because the random forest allows you that detail as opposed to just drawing a straight rectangle between them. So obviously the important thing to think about here is how close the data that we're creating is to the real thing. The obvious way to split it here is between ground balls and air balls, because when we're using the distance or the timer that, where it ended up to create this data, you're gonna lose a lot of information once the ball hits the ground. And so unsurprisingly, the correlations here for exit velocity and launch angle are lower than they are for air balls, but they're still pretty strong here. I mean, even for launch angle, we're talking about around 50% of the variance. You can see that the spray angle values here are obviously quite high. Part of the reason for that is the spray angles that are reported by MLB are not quite literally the spray angle off the bat. It's sort of a similar thing to what we're measuring, where it's where it was fielded by the first fielder. And so we decided to use our results there, and so we're essentially correlating our own spray angle with itself. So you can unsurprisingly see that it's quite high. For the air balls, there is a little bit of loss there, and that's the result of some degree of accommodating for the curvature of an air ball. And you can see that the correlations for exit velocity and launch angle on air balls are quite strong. The launch angle ones in particular are quite impressive. Just to show this sort of a different way, this is player average exit velocity in 2017 with ground balls and air balls. So you have the actual StatCast results on the bottom axis and synthetic StatCast on the y-axis. And you see sort of a similar relationship to what those correlations showed, where the air balls are doing quite well and the ground balls are doing worse, but obviously the correlations here are also quite strong. And here's a more detailed view of sort of what we're doing here. So this is two overlaid scatter plots for breakout hitters from 2017, Matt Chapman and Rhys Hoskins. So the black triangles that are sort of in the background here are the actual results that are being reported by StatCast. And the red triangles that are sort of upside down overlaid on top of them are the combination of the actual and the synthetic values. So that's the 13 to 15% that I was talking about earlier. We're leaving that other 85% the same, and we're overlaying the ones where we think that the synthetic values need to be added in there. And so you can see that most of these data points are, in fact, the triangles overlaid on top of each other to form a star. But there are a couple instances, in particular sort of on the top and the bottom, here and here, and then here and here, where you do see the black and the red triangles no longer overlaying against themselves. And before I go any further, I do want to point out a couple of points in particular. These very dark black triangles that are not overlaid correspond exactly to the 80 mile an hour-ish and negative 20 degrees and positive 70 degree points that were getting filled in earlier in the Andrew Perpetua plot. And you can see that for both Chapman and Hoskins, those values are getting pounded into their data set. And to show this a little bit more explicitly, this is essentially mapping the values that are getting provided by StatCast and the situation where we're filling them in. And you can see, obviously, on these filled-in values, we're getting quite a distribution of results on the synthetic compared to the actual. And you can see, especially on these ground balls here, we're getting quite different results. And here's a reproduction of the plot by Perpetua based on our data. You can see that we're not entirely done yet. There's definitely some smoothing out still to be done, but in particular on the peaks that are sort of on the periphery of the distribution, we're really smoothing them out and making it look like a distribution as we would expect it to look. So all the discussion previously was based on the MLB 2015 to 2017 dataset, the StatCast dataset. But obviously the advantage to using BIS data is that we have access to data beyond that range. So that's, you know, major leagues back to 2010 in terms, because we need the batted ball timer data. Obviously we have data earlier than that. The high minors, AA and AAA, back to 2013. And we don't have any data for you right now, but we're going to start having the Japanese data from the NPB in 2018, and we're really excited to get a chance to look at that stuff. So I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of using this data in those kinds of contexts. So hopefully this will, yeah, okay. So this is a GIF, raise your hand, if, which one, okay. So for Brian Dozier in 2013 versus 2015, one of the big things about him was that he changed his profile in the last couple years so that he really had his power stroke to left field as a right-handed hitter. And so you can see in the 2015 plot, I want to focus, so this is not quite literally a spray chart in the sense that the distance from home plate is really the exit velocity and the color is the launch angle. So your deep fly balls are your green data points, which is where I really want you to focus here. So in 2013, you can see that there is some degree of balance in his batted balls where he is getting a little bit more of a distribution of those batted balls in this area here in right center. And then in 2015, you have a very large concentration of batted balls that are getting hit hard to left field, and that corresponds to his increase in pull power. Here's an example of minor league data used for this purpose. So these are seasonal exit velocities on the x-axis and launch angles on the y-axis. And I just wanted to sort of, and this is the last 5 years of data. I just wanted to show you a couple of examples of sort of the points on the periphery that proved to be interesting players. So we have Terrence Gore here on the bottom left. The last 3 years, he's been an outlier in terms of having a low launch angle and a low exit velocity. So he's hitting it into the ground not very hard, which sort of explains the pinch runner thing. And then on sort of the opposite side of the distribution, we have Ryan Schimpf. So if Terrence Gore hits it into the ground, you might call him a worm killer. So you might call Ryan Schimpf like worm Jesus. He's hitting it, and it's rather astonishing, his distribution, minors, majors, whatever. He's hitting it 30 degrees into the air, and he's hitting it very hard, which is great, but he's essentially just getting flyouts as a result. Going a little bit lower here with a little more success, you have Jabari Blash. He just got traded from the Yankees to the Angels, and he has by far the highest average exit velocity of anybody in our data set. And, you know, if he can sort of translate that into a little bit better of an approach at the plate, I think that'd be really interesting. And then we have a couple guys who just sort of have unfortunate batted ball distributions. So we have Luke Monson, 2015, who is averaging around an 80 to 85 mile an hour exit velocity with a 27 degree average launch angle. And so that's basically averaging a pop-up, which isn't ideal. And then Darian Sanford, who was a guy who was bouncing around in indie ball for a while, and he got a shot at AA last year, and he proceeded to have an average launch angle just below zero and an average exit velocity of below 75, which is essentially weak line drives. So he, I believe he ended up slugging 240 last year, which is also not great. So here we sort of mimicked the definition of barrels that StatCast uses. Essentially, it's the exact same definition, just using our data. And these are your barrels per 100 batted ball leaders from 2017. So it's essentially your barrel percentage on batted balls. And you might not be surprised to see Blash on top of this list as well, quite high above everybody else. But the two interesting guys here are right below him, where Matt Chapman and Matt Olson, both from the A's, were brought up last year and had breakout offensive seasons. And we love Matt Chapman because of his defense at BIS, but obviously he does quite well from an offensive perspective as well. So what more can we do with this data? Obviously, the thing that makes the most sense is just to supplement the StatCast data set in terms of creating more long-term data and also filling in the gaps within the seasons that StatCast exists. And also, we're really excited to create some more nuanced defense-independent batting and pitching statistics. So you heard the presentation this morning about hit probability and how StatCast data can work with that. You can really do a lot with this sort of data in exactly that way. You can include the spray angle, and if you have a measure of batter speed, you include that as well. And so being able to take that kind of concept and apply it, especially outside of the era where we have StatCast data, and including minor leagues and stuff like that, I think is really interesting. And then also, you know, you saw the plot that I showed where I reproduced the Andrew Perpetua diagram there. There's still some work to be done, so we really want to make sure that we refine this a little more. Sort of the most glaring concerns are context. So unsurprisingly, the ballpark dimensions and potentially the altitude of the park has a lot of differences, especially between like AA and the majors or Japan. And the sort of elephant in the room is the ball, because the StatCast data set has existed essentially entirely overlapping with this juiced ball era. And so when we're trying to take that data and we're comparing it to the minor leagues in 2014, there won't necessarily be a perfect correspondence there. So we want to make sure that we make those adjustments and make sure that we adjust back if and when the ball changes back. The other thing that we can do better is more thoroughly identify these erroneous batted balls. So I mentioned the sort of chopper getting reported as a blooper. We can do a little bit better as well with erroneous horizontal angles and exit velocities and stuff like that. And frankly, we were just trying to be conservative and make sure not to replace a bunch of things that we weren't really sure about. But we can definitely do a better job of really thoroughly looking through that. And then the last thing is just, I mentioned a little bit earlier about how the minor league data is a little bit harder to come by just because the video quality is a little worse and maybe you don't get the right shot to time the batted ball. And so we can take steps that are similar to what MLB took in terms of the no nulls solution so that we can make sure that 0.005% in the majors, or maybe it's 4% in the minor leagues, we can make sure that we get 100% coverage by at least filling in something so that we have something from each data set to work with. So that's basically all I have for you today. I just wanted to make sure to thank Major League Baseball for having the StatCast product available so that we can ask the kinds of questions that we're asking today. The Video Scouts at Baseball Info Solutions for collecting the data that I used for this analysis. Saber for allowing me to present to you guys, and you guys for sticking around and not having a flight that was too early. Thank you. And if you have questions, feel free to.
I think I've heard more about spray this year than in other years. I've been here, I think, four times now. And I am wondering how the spray is measured and whether there's a definition.
Sure. So, yeah, so I mentioned that there's sort of a definitional difference in the way that we're talking about spray angle here with what you might sort of explicitly define it. When we're thinking in the StatCast context, the spray angle is essentially the horizontal angle immediately off of the bat. But when we are measuring it from a BIS perspective, we're measuring it wherever it lands or wherever it gets fielded, depending on the kind of batted ball. And so, in particular on air balls that are in the air for a while, if the hitter has a slice or something like that, you might see a sort of curved trajectory there. And so the spray angle, literally off the bat, is going to be a little bit tighter to zero than the actual angle that it ends up at. And so that's why you saw that the correlations there were not quite at one when we're essentially comparing data to itself. And that's because on air balls in particular, you're going to see a little bit of a compression of the spray angles towards zero when you're trying to mimic the actual StatCast data.
Does higher or lower spray angle correlate with anything good or bad?
So it's essentially just representing the direction it's going. And so there was a plot earlier of a cross-section of what's called the Woba cube, where it showed the distribution of how valuable a batted ball is depending on where it lands. And you can see that, you know, unsurprisingly, when you hit it at where a fielder tends to be, that's not very valuable. And when you hit it where a fielder tends not to be, that is valuable. And so that's really where the spray angle comes into play. It's just where you're going left or right. And so the importance is very much related to where the fielder is standing. But whenever you're trying to do an analysis of this sort, you would certainly want to know where it's actually getting hit, as opposed to it was hit at this angle this hard, but it's very different when I hit it directly towards the center fielder, that was a bad gesture, directly towards the center fielder or into right center.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jewish, it's fine.
The minor league data fascinates me. I was curious, have you looked at things like average exit velocity per level in the minor league or maximum exit velocity for players in the minor leagues versus the major leagues? I'm curious, is the difference between a minor league hitter and a major league hitter exit velocity, or is it launch angle or consistency of contact, or have you looked at any of those aggregated data across minor leagues versus major leagues?
So you're talking on a league-wide level.
On a league-wide, yeah. What's the difference between a major league hitter and a minor league hitter?
Right.
I guess is the question I'm asking.
I haven't, but that's really interesting. The one thing I have looked at is just sort of the comparison of a player in his minor league tenure versus a player in his major league tenure, and I'll admit that I wasn't splitting by level. So if he had potentially wildly different performance, maybe he had a weird park discrepancy. Guys who are playing in Las Vegas and then switching. So like those kinds of situations, I wouldn't account for. But you do see a pretty strong consistency both in terms of their exit velocity within the same season, minors, majors, and also season to season, minors, majors. There are some, there's definitely a little bit of ballpark-ish, some kind of adjustment that needs to occur there. For example, there are guys like Rhys Hoskins was on there. His exit velocity dropped a bunch when he went from AA to AAA, partially because of the move from Reading. And so there's a little bit of ballpark stuff to be fixed there, and I did mention that that's a bit of a limitation at the moment. Nobody? Okay, thank you.